had to give up all of the practices and was put into a position where I have to live life very simply, very simplified. And that's when my spiritual practice started to just be my daily life.
You're listening to Living the Unseen, the podcast where Ariana and I explore how we can incorporate spirituality into our everyday lives.
CEO and spiritual medium. Not really two job titles you generally see together on someone's LinkedIn profile. Unless that person is Larissa Hemmesegger, our guest for this episode. For the longest time, Larissa felt like a stranger on earth, until she learned how to connect to her heart and was able to finally merge her rational and her spiritual side. This fundamentally changed the way she's living her life and runs her language school, Unamondo. Let's dive in.
I thought it would be nice to start with your company, because I feel there's a lot moving and shifting in the way you think about your company, you lead the people in your company, and I would love to hear a little bit more about where you are with leading your company in a spiritual way.
That reminds me just of the situation from yesterday. I was with Melanie, the woman that I work with, who is absolutely a gem. And we were talking with two guys who are also founders and also friends. And we had to laugh because we work completely differently. We take naps, we take it slow, we work part-time, we do basically everything based on intuition, and we ask for guidance from the spirit world. And so that was just a funny moment to notice how different we actually work. So basically we start the week by tuning in. Every Monday morning we tune in, and tuning in for us means we close our eyes and we drop back into our bodies and we open up to ask. And we actually also do a prayer every morning, every Monday morning. We ask for protection for the company, for everyone involved. We ask for guidance so that we do the work that is for the highest good of everybody involved. And we ask for guidance and insights for the week. And then there's different layers. What I love is the energetic layer, where I see the company as a house, and then I see where it's at. I see if some room needs something. I see if something is in the room that doesn't need to be there. I see if a window is closed, things like that, or if there's an energy missing. And then we actually go through all the areas of the company and ask for guidance. Is there something in that area that we should focus on? Is there a priority? Are we missing something? So that's how we plan the week. And actually also every time we work on a project, we don't brainstorm, we tune in. So brainstorm doesn't exist in our in our world. We call it tune in. Melanie and I look at each other. And we were like, tuning in? Yeah, tuning in. And we drop back and we ask, can we see what needs to be seen on this project? What's the priorities? Everything that we want to know about the project or the next steps. So that's a little bit of an insight. Of course, there's lots more.
Maybe you can make it even more practical. So you have a language school, and today is Thursday as we're recording, so Monday is a few days ago. What were things that came up on Monday, and how are they manifesting in what you're doing throughout this week?
Well, on Monday, basically, it says what are we supposed to do this week? What has priority? Very specific tasks. Sometimes it's talk to that coach because that coach needs something. Or send that email to that and that person, or focus on that, we're actually in the middle of a new branding. Just read this and that. Like, you don't need to finish it yet, but read about it and open the door for it, for example. But also the guidance is also this week, take it easy, take a lot of rest, don't work too much. Like, we don't work too much anyways, but so we receive guidance. Is that more clear? Is that more concrete?
Yeah, and yeah. I'm also wondering, like, now you're like two people, you talked about Melanie. Has it always been like this between the two of you? Like, did you also select each other as maybe co-founders or business partners based on the fact that you both have this intuition and connection? Or did your ways of working shift from something that it was before to how you described it now?
Yeah, now that quote pops into my mind, your vibe attracts your tribe. And my vibe was a very different one for a long time. And I was very split within these two worlds, kind of, well, quote unquote, two worlds, kind of this business startup environment, but also this healing and spiritual development and soul work. And for me, it was always two different things. And I couldn't really combine them, or I didn't see how they actually are one. And there was a lot of inner work. I founded this company myself, and it took 6 years until I was ready to meet Melanie, I would say, because Melanie is a dream come true. Before, I had a lot of conditionings of, no, I have to do everything myself. I cannot trust anybody. I need to be responsible for everything. I'm not receiving any help from anywhere. So all these programs to work through. And then when I was ready, and when I was also in a very kind of whole place of, oh, everything is not everything, but I feel integrated and whole. Like, there's no two worlds within me anymore. And I'm actually able to receive support. That's when Melanie showed up. And it was a very natural process. We met at a festival. We had a really beautiful connection. A few months later, she heard that I have a language school, an unconventional one. And then we had a conversation. She started as a coach. And when I was thinking about, I was ready to not do it alone anymore. And I was ready to work again. I took a long break while the company was still running, which is very beautiful. And every time I was thinking about the projects that I would like to start, Melanie came into my field. And then I had to write her. I'm like, Melanie, every time I'm thinking about the projects, you pop into my field. She's like, yeah, I feel it too. Let's have a chat. And that's how we talked, and everything unfolded very naturally, very easy. And that's how it is since then. It's almost a year.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that something has also noticeably changed for your employees or your coaches or your the people you work with, because they have known you for quite a few years before Melanie showed up? And so do you think from their perspective they can notice a difference in how you're leading the company, or is it just like you give them a call whenever you feel like it's the moment to give them a call, but it doesn't make any noticeable difference for them actually?
Because of Melanie's on board, or because I'm doing things differently?
Both, probably, but mostly because you're doing things differently, which also has to do with Melanie, apparently, but also with how you shifted your own way of working. Like, if the same person has started working with you 6 years ago and is still working with you, let's assume one of the coaches, how is it different for them now to work with you than what it was before?
Do they notice a difference? I mean, they definitely notice a difference because I can finally do a lot of things that I was not able to do before because Melanie is here. I always had very, very high expectations in terms of ethics and values, and I was also very overwhelmed doing it alone. So with her, I can implement much more elements that I couldn't myself. And so what we, for example, have is very regular coach community calls. Mm-hmm. We have about 22 coaches right now, and they're all very spread out. They all do their work outside in the field, I would say. And it was important that we come more together, that we feel we're actually one team. And so we have these coach community calls that are very regular. And there, I think I show myself differently. Mm-hmm. I definitely developed in what kind of leader I am. I'm more clear, I'm more grounded, I'm more present. And I actually start to talk to them very normally, like, let me see, I'll have a look when we have a conversation. Let me see what's going on there. And then what I mean by that is I look into the energetic field and then I tell them, and they seem to just receive it very naturally. Like they don't seem like that this is something weird. We also do, for example, visualizations in the coach community calls, but things like where I'm not telling them what to visualize, but they have to see, like receive the vision. For example, invite the vision of what effect you have on the people with your work, what effect you have on the society with your work. Close your eyes, drop in, and let yourself be shown what effect you have. And everybody was really open to do that, very normal. Nobody questioned it. And the images that the people received were very powerful.
Mm-hmm. And what I find really beautiful about how you talk about it now is that there's such an ease in how you do this, how you bring this into how you do your work, but also how you live your personal life and make choices in your personal life. And I know that that's not something that shifted from one day to the other, but that you have very, very clear practices that you do, right? Very clear spiritual practices that help you get to this place.
So, well, I used to, like many people, start with yoga and meditation and became a yoga teacher and a meditation teacher. And the spiritual practice was very separate from my kind of daily life. It's like, okay, now I do an hour of this, or now I sit at my altar and meditate. And of course, this was a very important part of my journey and are very valuable practices. In my case, about 2 years ago, they all had to die. And it was a very hard death because somehow, and it's very interesting, it's quote unquote, they didn't work anymore. Well, it's a big complex to explain what I mean by they didn't work anymore, but I lost all of it. I had to give up all of the practices and was put into a position where I have to live life very simply, very simplified. And that's when my spiritual practice started to just be my daily life. Slowing down, for example, I would call it, is a spiritual practice. And slowing down, I noticed that I'm doing it while I walk from the dishwasher to the table in the kitchen. That's where I walk slowly. Because the purpose is to just become more calm in my system and become more present and become more grounded and to just feel what's going on. So one of the important spiritual practices I would say is that I'm constantly very present with what's going on within myself. How do I feel? Is this uncomfortable? Am I crossing a boundary here? How's my heart? Is my heart racing? Is it closing? So I'm kind of very present with what's going on inside. And I think for that, to come to such a place, I mean, it was a long and hard journey, but something that I also often do is spending time alone and spending time in silence. I have a lot of outer silence so that I can listen. So listening, I would say, is an important spiritual practice to me, listening to everything that's outside of me and inside of me. Spiritual practice. I don't know. Somehow I think also, what is even a spiritual practice? I don't even really know what a spiritual practice is. For me, a spiritual practice is also I'm outside in nature and I feel nature. I feel my surrounding. And probably the biggest or most important spiritual practice for me is to be in the heart. And because the heart for me is the place where I feel this kind of that we're all interconnected, that we're all one. For me, that's in the heart. For other people, their kind of bridge or their portal to spiritual, to the spiritual realm is more the solar plexus or maybe the crown chakra. For me, it's the heart. It's not for everyone the same. And so I have a big practice with my heart, I would say. constantly checking in with my heart and really doing everything that my heart is open and my heart is. Actually, my heart is very, very open. Sometimes I look up because I check in. Is it true what I'm saying? And I check in with my guides. Is that true? Is my heart very open? And then they're like, yeah, that's right. Or sometimes they say, no, you got it wrong in that. But yeah, I could go on and on, I would say, with this question. It's kind of just really integrated in how, because when I walk through my life with an open heart, I feel everything. Like I feel everyone. I feel how everything is connected, even objects. And that makes me really feel this sense of, wow, this is, nothing is separate. Nothing is actually separate. But yeah, it's a long practice to really have an open heart in this. With all the wounds we carry, all the emotions, all the grief and everything that's going on outside of us and in the world, to have an open heart to keep the heart open is work, I would say. I cannot deny it.
No, I think what you're saying is also really hopeful, because I know that many of us are looking for, you know, like I did the yoga teacher training, right? We're looking for this outside thing or this outside practice. And the way you practice your spirituality is really so integrated in how you go through your day. And I love taking these little moments of I'm walking from the dishwasher to the table. And that's what I use to tune in, rather than I get on my bike and I go to my yoga class and that's where it happens. And then I go back home and then I get back to my fuzzy life. Yeah, I think that is, mm-hmm. that's really, it doesn't mean that it's easy what you're doing, but it means that if there's a willingness to embrace, yeah, this connection to everything, that it's accessible without, you know, changing your life completely. Well, yeah, you need to change some things about your life, but without just looking for it externally.
I also feel we have often just these high expectations that a spiritual practice needs to have a very strong effect right after or right while I'm doing it. And I mean, walking from the dishwasher to the table in a slow manner, you don't feel a huge change right away. It's like, what does that even do anything? Right? I think that's where we can just, I think maybe it's also helpful to hear, like, it actually does a lot. It's very effective if you do that regularly.
And you don't have to feel this huge, you don't have to feel a huge shift. I think that's also, exactly. we're so programmed to expect, I go to a yoga class, so now I feel inner peace. Like, no, you're just doing it's not a quick fix. It's you're doing the work, and all of these little micro moments that you walk to the dishwasher or you're outside in nature, all of that together brings a big shift. But it's not I do this for 1 hour and now I'm enlightened. That's for most
exactly.
of us.
Yes, and I think what is stopping us from incorporating more of the spirituality, this practical urban spirituality into our lives is often that we feel like it has to last for a long time. Like you need to have a full hour to have a proper meditation, or you need to have a fancy yoga studio and so on. And for me, like what popped up in my head when I was listening to you, Larissa, was like, for me, writing has a very special place in my heart. And I always keep telling myself, like, if I only had more time, I would want to write more. I would want to sit at 5 a.m. at my desk and like really go at it for an hour or two. And I realized, like, with two little kids, it's really hard to carve out this kind of time that I would need to do that. But at some point in time, I started accepting that this is how my life is at the moment. And I started incorporating what you just called micro moments into situations where I would never have thought that I could be writing. So when I go on a run, I often stop and pause and take out my phone and really write something down, because it just pops up in situations where you need to be willing to receive it, right? So you don't get to choose, like, it's only at 5 a.m. In the morning where I'm going to be in my creative space. If you're really open to the idea that these moments can happen everywhere and anywhere, then you start receiving it more often, right? And that was, at least that what's happening to me with writing, that I'm now giving myself permission to write at any place and in any moment. I did that at the gym, I did it when I'm running, I did it on the train. Sometimes it just pops up and I'm trying to keep the barrier low to drop into this feeling and to, like, capture it on my phone in a little notebook, whatever. And I'm never sitting down at my desk to write, actually. I never have the time to do that, but I have started to write way more by capturing these micro moments. And I think it sounds a bit similar to, like, building the foundation by allowing you to drop into this feeling or into your body in a very normal moment, like walking from the dishwasher to your table. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What popped up for me was really when you mentioned willing to receive. It's that's such a beautiful element of, willing to receive support from, or guidance or inspiration. And what do I need that I can be willing to receive? We need a lot of presence and just being, even on the run, right? You're on the run and you're being present, and then there is the opportunity to receive. I love that. I love willing to receive. Yeah.
I wanted to, yeah, you're welcome. I just wanted to go back to one more thing that you just said previously. You said you're spending a lot of time in silence, a lot of time by yourself. And yeah, this really resonates with me. And at the same time, I felt like, oh, this is a luxury that I would want to have more of, that I'm sometimes not giving myself permission to access. So I was just wondering, like, if I can see the benefits of silence and spending time alone a lot for many, many people. I wish that everybody would do more of this. But what do you think is stopping us from spending more time in silence and being more by ourselves? Can you see any patterns that are happening? And also, what has helped you give yourself permission to do that? And did you have to stop something else in return to get this time and free up this space for yourself? Was there anything uncomfortable about it, or was it just a natural process?
Well, lots of deprogramming of lots of very strong programs that we have in, especially our Western society. I remember, and I'm definitely coming from the opposite of not being able to even take a break, or finding it horrible to spend time alone and really wanting to fill up that void. I remember my dad, he was very wise in giving, but not so good at embodying them himself. But I remember when I was building my business a few years in, and he said, you know, taking a break is actually not a luxury. It's a necessity. You need to take a break. I'm like, I don't know how that works. My mind is spinning. My mind is running like crazy. And I have so much on the table, and I have no money in my bank account. How am I supposed to take a break? But that's programs. So yeah, it's a lot of healing those wounds that we have, that we need to be productive all the time, that we need to be doing something all the time. This has been, they serve their purpose, they come from a reason, but they don't serve most of the time anymore. And another reason, I guess, why it's hard to go into silence, it's like, that's when things come up. That's when it can get uncomfortable. That's when you actually notice that you're extremely stressed, or that your mind is spinning, or that there is suppressed emotions, or that you're actually, whatever it is. So also learning to be with that and learning to move through everything that comes up is not something that we've learned in school. We all know that. And I think also being in that void is very uncomfortable, because there's no safety in it, like no external safety. It's like, what is happening here? I don't know. And is anything ever going to happen after that void? Or So lots of things that make it, of course, challenging for us in the Western society to go there.
But for me, like, silence is such a luxury.
Yeah, I understand that. I lived now with, I was in Portugal for a bit more than a month, and I lived with two friends of mine, a couple, and their six months old baby. And I'm used to having extremely silent mornings. And this is very important for me to kind of, it takes a long time until I'm ready for connecting with something external outside of me. And it was very interesting experience, but it was very clear also that I wake up and get up with my earplugs still in my ears. I would nod to them, seeing them in the morning, like maybe a little waving at them, but then I would be still focusing completely on my inside. And I would do my breakfast and I would sit outside and take in some sun on my face and take some fresh breaths of air. And then I feel exactly the moment when I'm ready to take them out and to talk to them, like, oh, hey, good morning. And we hug and I'm ready for the day with you. But yeah, I always think about parents and couples and like, wow, this must be so intense to constantly have someone around you and constantly have people talking and crying. And yeah, so I feel for them. And also, we also don't all need the same. And we also don't need to reach the same level in every kind of area.
That's true.
So these expectations of like, oh, I need a lot of silence because I need to get to I don't know what kind of place. Yeah, no, you have a complete different role.
That's true. And at the same time, I feel like sometimes it's also that we just think we cannot have it. So I thought like, okay, there's no way I can start my mornings independently, which is something I'm very much craving, just like you, Larissa, because my kids still co-sleep with us in our bed. And like the moment I get up, they get up. And so it's really hard to like defend and set the boundaries, defend my space in the morning. And that kept me from even trying for a long time. And last year, then I just did this experiment where I told them like, look, I'm going to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning. I'm going to go to my room and I'm going to sit in silence and you're welcome to join. But these are the rules. Like there is silence. You can come, you can sit next to me. We can even cuddle, but I want silence. And if you want to be in the same room and listen to like an audiobook, then bring your headphones and you can do that. Like I'm not excluding you, but this is the one thing that I'm asking and requesting for everyone else in my family to respect. And it worked quite well, actually. Like after the second time, Matteo, my son, sat in the room and listened to an audiobook. Sometimes they crawl under my little blanket. And since I'm ready to receive them now, it makes it easier. Because at the beginning, I thought I want to really exclude them from the room, from my practice. And then I had this internal fight, like they got up, I heard a little feet on the floor. It's like, oh man, they're coming into my room, they're disturbing my practice. Now I'm getting angry. Like, can I have like this moment for myself in the morning? And I think I shifted to like, what is a way that I can have some of the silence and some of the presence and mindfulness in the morning and also give them a way to be a part of it? And it's not perfect, but it's better than nothing. That's what I did for a while last year. Currently, I'm sleeping in again, but I did it for a while and it worked actually quite well. And I think it's also nice for them to see parents who take this kind of space for themselves and model this kind of behavior. Because if I never do that, I can imagine that one day they might be parents who never take up space for themselves. And so, yeah, I'm just trying to explore if there is like some common ground where we can, yeah, also share this experience in different ways.
I love that. And it comes from this, right, from this listening again of like, oh, I actually have a need. And I notice that I'm actually allowed to have that need. And then, because many people don't even have that, like, no, I'm not allowed to. I need to serve and I need to be present with everybody else. And then suddenly noticing, no, something needs to shift here. And then I hear people say, yeah, but it doesn't work because then this and this and this happen. And it's like, yeah, there's a bit of inner work for first, probably, where you're embodying it already. And then the energy field is very clear. like, and then it has to become more easy by just natural law of how that works with these fields. Yeah, beautiful example.
Can you say more about that? Because I think it's really, really important what you're saying, like how to get to that stage from this is impossible, I'm serving everyone else, to already embodying that person that is doing this practice or taking this space. Can you say more about how people can get from phase one to phase two?
Well, it's probably kind of working with triggers. I don't have my space. I cannot be silenced. There's something is triggered, right? I'm getting some kind of emotional response to this, and kind of maybe a little bit of a victim energy, mm-hmm. which is completely understandable. Like everybody else, and I'm not, or whatever, something like that. Very understandable and part of the process. And I think it's just the topic of understanding what a trigger is, and that it's always an invitation to look inside first and understand what's the invitation for myself here. Is this pointing to a belief? Is this pointing to a wound? Is this pointing to a memory that I have that I don't know, as an example, as a mother, I cannot XYZ? And then go from there. I mean, that's a big topic and a big topic to explore, I would say. But go from there. Can I get curious about my inner world when something happens that feels uncomfortable?
I can give an example of that to make it really practical. So this room where I'm sitting now used to be our guest room, because we had a story about we want our home to be welcoming. We want our parents to be able to come over easily. So there was like a big bed here. And then I had like a tiny desk somewhere in a corner. And I realized, like, wow, we have a home and I don't have a space for myself. And I was really in that victim mm-hmm. mode of, how is it even possible that Steph, my husband, created his beautiful office, his fancy desk, and I'm sitting here in the guest room with like a tiny desk? And I was very upset about that. And then realizing, like, well, I do that to myself. I allow myself to be in the guest room. And the only thing I had to do then was to tell Steph, like, it's really important that I have my own space. And he was like, oh, we'll just sell the bed and get one of those, you know, foldable couches so that people can sleep on that. And you tell me what you want in your office. You tell me how this can become your room. And it was so easy then. And it felt so hard when I was in my victim mode about, oh, I don't have space. I'm this cliche of a mom who, you know, is taking care of all the others. And then just to sit and feel and being a victim, I think is, yes, in our Western societies, we don't allow ourselves to be that. It's the worst of the worst, because everything you're supposed to be able to make and create and manifest. So if you feel that victimhood, you just want to push it away. But to go there to feel like, oh, I really, really feel like a victim. And then it disappears so quickly, right?
I think that the second thing that comes up for me is that we often also assume that everybody needs the same things and that we need to get equal, right? So in terms of, like, if I get a week off for myself and do a solo vacation, my partner also gets a week off and does a solo vacation, right? But I realized 5 years into my marriage that we don't need the same amount of me time, right? So I need much more of that. And I didn't give it to myself because I thought, like, he doesn't need it, so I don't get to do that, right? Because we need to be equal. We need to get the same amount of free time, for example. And for me, that doesn't work. I need a lot more. I'm highly sensitive. I'm perceiving a lot of things. So I need more time to rest. I need more time. I need to work part-time instead of full-time. And I also want more solo vacations and more weekends off. And just because he doesn't crave it, I still get to ask for it. And that made it so much easier for me to access this luxury of me time and silence, because I'm now giving myself permission to want things that my partner does not necessarily want for himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. This transactional thing also. I get this and then you get the same thing. And also for the people, I can imagine that there are people feeling, But just because I communicate has not changed anything yet, and it's not gone yet. And it is true, sometimes these patterns hit a bit deeper than, oh, I can just realize it and feel it, and then it's gone and everything changes. And sometimes we really have to go deep, and maybe even childhood stuff or even past life stuff. And there's so many ways. So also compassion for the people who sometimes get stuck in that. It's so understandable. It can be very tricky to get out of some patterns. And maybe you express something and the person in front of you is just like not hearing it, for example, or not responding well to it, or how you would have wished to. I love that example from Ariane because it also shows like, yeah, but it's also possible that it's that easy. Like you can have someone in front of you that really supports you with that, and you just have to voice it. I love that this is also possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no elegant bridge for my next question, but I do really want to talk about it. So I'm going to do an unelegant bridge. No, I would really, really love to talk a bit more about your spirit guides and how they help you in your day to day.
Maybe people don't know what spirit guides are even. So we all have our team of, spirit beings, and they're here to support us. However, they can support us better if we ask them and give them permission. They're kind of waiting to support. And for me, this has changed a lot a few months ago, where the communication with them got very, 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 very clear. I can basically ask anything and receive answer. Of course, always if I'm supposed to receive the answer and if it's for my highest good, etc. But how I work with them is I actually, at the moment, it's still like that I need to check in with them several times a day to see if there's something they want to tell me. And at some point, I made a list of areas in my life that actually they helped me create. And I'm going through every area of my life every day. Is there something about, for example, my company that I should know? Is there something about, and have the area of my relationships, and they're divided in circle one, circle two, etc., like close friends a bit further away. Is there something about those relationships? There's also one area where I ask, does anybody need anything? And then people show up in my field that need some kind of support that I can provide. Finances, I ask, is there something for me today to know about my finances? So basically, I'm asking for support and guidance and information in all areas of my life at the moment, very regularly. And I can do the same thing for others, which is quite a good thing.
Maybe it's actually cool to talk about how you do this for others, because you are also supporting individuals and teams and even couples with checking in for them. What can that look like?
It's actually something I really, really love to do, because it finally brings together all the area or all the experiences that I have into kind of one. And I can explain it maybe with an example of two guys that I'm supporting. I just checked in if I'm allowed to say who it is. It's a no. So that's why I sometimes take a break. It's like, am I allowed to say these things? And there are two founders of a company, and I support them with all sorts of things, I would say. And how that looks like is that we start the session with a prayer of protection and guidance and dropping in into the field. And then I right away check, is there anything that is blocking our work that we're doing today? There's all sorts of different blockages. What's the cool thing is I receive the information about, is there a priority? Is there something we really need to talk about today? Is there something in the field that needs to be addressed? I see the energetic field of the company. I also see, and that's what I love the most, I think I love that the most, when the people are meant to evolve into a next into another level of, for example, their leadership, and something is blocking them. And for me, it's very easy to see what's blocking, where does it come from, is that a childhood pattern even? So we can sometimes, that even means we have to do inner child work or embodiment work. And the cool thing is it's very efficient. I love efficiency. For me, it was usually very hard to receive kind of mentoring, I would call it, from people who are not clairvoyant, because they often stick to some concepts, or like, now this needs to happen and that. And for me, it was very frustrating because it most of the time felt wrong. And we were talking about things that have no priority and we get lost in topics. And so I love that about this work, because I can cut them off when I notice, no, now you're drifting off and this has to do something with something else and this is not priority. Can we come back to that topic? And it can range from, because I have so much experience now with this whole entrepreneurship thing, and but also seeing the energetic fields of the company, but also the people. Sometimes it's also emotional work, being seen, being heard by each other. It's more kind of like relationship work between the two people. And very concrete also, is there an area in the business that needs focus, or is there something you're doing that you're not, that is a waste of time, or is there areas that would require a bit more focus?
You also did this in our friendship. So okay. A while ago, you sent me a voice message and you said, hey, I noticed there is something blocking us in developing our friendship further. Mm. And it's actually very basic. It's that you put me, so you put me on a pedestal for my confidence in business, I think you said, and I put you on a pedestal for how you are living your spirituality. And you were very matter of fact about it. Like, we just need to drop that. We should stop putting each other on a pedestal. And I think we just did that the same day, and it changed a lot in our friendship. We got much closer just because of that 2-minute voice message that you sent us. So how does that work? How does that come up? And
That was really beautiful. But what I do there is check in into the relationship field that we have, the both of us. And then I ask, is there something? Yeah, there's different questions I go through. But for example, is there something blocking? And like, yeah, there's something blocking. Oh, what are we doing? That's about this and that. And then that's where I saw that we put each other on a pedestal and that it's not serving. I think the effect, and then I see the effect of it. What's the exact effect of it? And I think the effect was, let me see. It keeps us distant from each other. That's just something then I see in the field. And then the question is, okay, what do we have to do about it? Or what can we do about it? And there's just always many different things to do about it. Sometimes it's not just an easy thing that we do once. Sometimes it's kind of a practice that we might maybe have to do for like a few weeks, or we have to check in where it comes from. This for us, it was clear, like, no, the realization in this case is enough. And taking it energetically out of our field. Like, you can actually take things and put them somewhere else in this energetic rooms. And in that case, that was just enough. It's not always enough. And I love the effect of it, because we actually got very much closer now that I'm like being present about this. It's like a lot, no?
Yeah, so we were lucky that it was an easy one for us this time, but it doesn't have to be something that's so
and again, exactly. Oh, and what it was there, that is that we can invite the inspiration of it and see it as a mirror also, that, hey, there's elements within me about that want to come forth. And actually, for example, for me, the confidence in business, I now can take Ariana as an inspiration, and understanding also how energetics work is like, actually she's supporting me in that by just me seeing her as an inspiration, mm-hmm. instead of being envious or seeing the lack within me. And that actually works, which is really cool. So I also have another friend and she's spot on with her energy and her directiveness, and wow, amazing. I'm just gonna tune into her energy today because this is the energy that I need. Can I receive support? And of course, I mean, there's also energetic boundaries you need to be careful, but it's a whole other topic. But it actually works to use people as inspiration.
Yeah. I wonder, because it sounds like you're receiving a lot of information. I mean, sometimes you're deliberately, or often you're deliberately checking in and asking for it, but I also assume, just that's an assumption, that you're also receiving a lot of information that maybe sometimes you haven't even asked for. And then there's the second step of like, how much of that do I share back, right? So what is it like to perceive a lot of information and then not always having the level of comfort or the relationship that you now have with Ariana to be able to then say some of this back and use it to then shift some dynamics? I assume that a certain percentage of what you know and perceive is not, you're not being vocal about that, because it's maybe not your place to say it, or for some other reason you're not sharing it back. Can you talk about that and what that's like and what it does to you? Because just out of curiosity, I think that sounds also a bit exhausting and maybe challenging sometimes to keep things, receive things that you're not allowed to act on.
Yeah, actually makes me emotional hearing that. I notice that goes deep. So thank you for addressing that topic. Just recently, actually, I asked my guides, because I went through something difficult, and I asked my guides, what's actually the hardest thing I went, like, that I'm going through, or that I'm living, or that I've moved through? And it's not the most difficult thing. They divide difficult and hard. And I was very surprised by the answer. And they say, the fact that you see more than most people in my surrounding. And I was surprised, like, is that the hardest thing? And now day by day I notice, actually, yes. And even you telling me that now, it touches a pain point in my heart, because I do perceive the world differently then. And I always ask, is that even true? So I ask, is that true that I perceive it differently than most people, or see more? And it's like, yes. And that was a process also. I already perceived a lot as a child, as many do, and learning that you cannot address it, or because the other one cannot receive it, or you're not supposed to address it because the other one should not know about it, or it would overwhelm that person if you share it, right? It's also a boundary topic of like, I see something, I'm sharing with another person can really have also a negative effect on them. So what I learned in this is just having very strong ethics about it. I ask always before I share something, is this for the highest good if I share this? But there's also a lot of pain moving through of like not being seen, not being understood, which was a deep wound, and that I put a lot of healing into it. So yes, it's difficult, and I do feel lonely about it sometimes, and it's frustrating because I see a lot and the person in front of me doesn't see it.
Yeah, and maybe also if you flip it the other side, we have not met in person, right, the two of us. We're about to meet each other in a week. I'm super excited about that. And also now I know, like, okay, you know so much, and you see and perceive so much. Like, when I gonna be with you in the same room, and even I don't have to be in the same room, probably you might already know things more than I do about myself, right? That also creates a certain dynamic. And for me, like, I'm just curious about it. I'm probably gonna ask you a couple of questions when we see each other, and you can then decide what to share and what not to share. But it also does something to the equilibrium between two people if one person seems to know more about the other person. I have another friend who looks at me, I can really see him, feel him scan my soul. Right, I know in that moment. I never asked me how I'm doing, because I know he knows. He just looks at me and I'm being scanned, and I know that, and I'm okay with it in this situation because he's a friend and that's just the connection that we have. But I can imagine it can also make people uncomfortable if they feel like I cannot really hide. I cannot hide anything from that person. Like maybe that's also too deep and you don't need to answer that. But I was just wondering, like, if you have any thoughts about that.
No, I love that you mentioned that. And it's there's also been different changes within me. So first, what I can now do is close the channel. I was not able to do that for a long, long, long time. And so I'm not just constantly receiving information anymore if I don't want to. Of course, I still have very open receptors and still perceive constantly a lot, but I can control it more. And I do have very strong ethics about it. Like, I would never just look into a person if I'm not supposed to or not allowed to. Or so I would never just scan you if that's not for both of our highest good. It would be an ego thing for me in that case. And there I have very, very, very strong values about that. So I hope you feel safe when you meet me.
I'm not going to. No, I totally do. I'm super excited to meet you. And I think it's kind of what, I don't know, was it Spider-Man who said, like, with great power comes great responsibility? I'm not sure if you're supposed to bring up Spider-Man in a spirituality podcast, but here it comes.
I love it. Yeah. It's true. I mean, recently I also got some new, let's say, I don't like really the word ability, but at the moment I don't have another one. And I have a conversation with my guides like, ooh, this is a lot of power. And I've worked a lot with my ego. And before I wanted to have all these abilities and I felt and compared myself a lot to others who had some abilities, which of course they all come from some sort of wound and lack. And I don't have that anymore. So they're also aware that I'm not using my ego to do something. It's always I always ask, is this for the highest good? I even have a way to ask, is my ego coming in the way here? So there is a lot of power involved in this, and you can do really nasty stuff with all of that. And also just the question that you asked, like, is there constantly information coming in? And that was also before I was able to kind of close the channel. It was very, very, very overwhelming, and often it came at night. And then I would be awake for hours at night because there's so much information coming through. And so even today, still, I have to take the time during the day. If I don't take the time to receive the information, it will come at night. So it's kind of a necessity to take that time. Otherwise, I'll pay for it with the sleepless night. But again, I'm also still in the process. There's constant evolving. Maybe at some point that's not necessary anymore. And I can always choose if I want information or not. I don't know. There's always something new I'm learning. It's never ending.
And you just said something so beautiful that I think is a perfect way to bring the conversation back to where it started. You just said, like, these two questions, is this for the highest good? And is my ego getting in the way? I think if people in business started asking this question every morning with every decision they take, they don't need to be spiritual, quote unquote. But I think these two questions, like, if everybody started asking themselves these two questions, I mean, we would be so much better off.
Yes, please. More of this. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So we're about to wrap up our conversation, but I wanted to check if there's anything that we didn't touch on that you feel is important to share.
Well, I'm asking, and apparently there is something, some sort of message for the people listening. Is that right? I feel under performance pressure here because there's people listening.
That's just your ego.
I do have this. I'm not free of these things. Okay. It's an invitation to notice the beauty that surrounds us. And Yeah, I'm invited to share this example, and we can take it into our daily lives. This one of my most favorite spiritual practice is when I'm in a room and there is sunlight coming in, and it creates a picture on a wall because maybe there is a tree before in front of the sunlight, and maybe there's a little wind and it moves, and it creates this beautiful shadow of the tree on the wall. And when I look at it, like, my heart opens, I'm present, I'm in awe of nature, of the moment, and an invitation to observe beauty and notice beauty in our daily lives.
Thank you for listening to Living the Unseen, the podcast in which Ariana and I explore the role of spirituality in everyday life. Stay tuned for our next episodes to meet more inspiring guests and hear more anecdotes from our personal lives to inspire your own spiritual journey. And if you want to dive deeper, we invite you to sign up for our newsletter on our website, livingtheunseen.com, to read more about our podcast guests, hear our personal reflections on the episodes, and be the first one to know when a new episode comes out. And lastly, we are immensely grateful for your support. If you enjoy our content, we would love for you to rate us with 5 stars on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and gives Ariana and me some extra motivation on our podcast journey. Until next time, and keep living the unseen.